That's the beauty of appreciation, you know? It just sort of bubbles over and fills us up when we express it. Yeah. So when we take rest, when we pause from our busyness, we drop into that place that is appreciative, that is gratitude, that is love, that is peace. It's so simple, really, isn't it? I tend to complicate things. I don't know about you. Years ago, in 2010, I did my first vision quest. So I had been out in the wilderness with a group and then solo for 4 days. And so I'd really become very versed. You know, you sort of get stripped down into that sort of, I don't know what to call it exactly. It's like one with the sentient beings of the nature, you know? So there's just a real, plus fasting. So there's just a real, really in the earthiness of it. And so by then I'd been very versed in communicating with the trees and the rocks and the land and the waters, you know. And it was then that I went out into the ancient bristlecone pine forest. Has anybody been there near Big Pine? Oh, must go. It's a must. The ancient bristlecone pine forest here in California has trees that are older or just as old as the time when the Buddha and Jesus walked the earth. These guys have been standing here through all that time. And they're beautiful. They have this real golden, especially the older ones, have this real golden cast to their trunks and their gnarled limbs, and such a wisdom. So to walk amongst that forest and talk to the trees is really quite something. So I went with that kind of openness and sort of stripped down space, that open-heartedness, you know. And I found immediately this large tree that really called to me, and I really got a grandmotherly kind of energy from it. And nearby, kind of sharing the root system, was a smaller tree, and I asked the grandmother tree, "Who's that?" She said, "Oh, that's my daughter." And so as I was about to then go home, I was on a sabbatical from my previous church at Unity of Columbia, and so I was asking for a message, you know, what is mine to bring back to my people? What's the message? And I was so surprised at the simplicity of the message I received from this great tree. She said, "Take rest." That was it. It's like, what? There's got to be more. I need something more, you know, I don't know, sexier. But it was, as I sat with it, it really felt like, yes, of course take rest. Our society is starving for that message, aren't we? Aren't we all? Yeah. Because our culture and our society continues to breed the rhythm of more and faster, right? And then when difficult things happen, it's the get over it kind of energy, right? And move on and quickly, you know, just get out of that discombobulated state and do what's ours to do, you know. But rest is a beautiful way in which we pause in spirit and we get clarity and insight and rest for the body and expansiveness for the mind, and we allow the spirit to move. So rest is a brilliant thing for that tree to call forth for all of us. You know, when a dancer dances, there is a still point in the dance. And that still point might be the most powerful part of the dance, because it's when we're all sort of rested with the dancer, right? Before the next movement happens. And for the dancer themselves, that grounding before the next set of movements. The same with music, right? The rest between the notes is really powerful. Place where we drop in. We may not even notice it if we're not playing, or even when we're singing, we may not notice it so much, but the rest is so important. That's what lets us have the breath so we can project the song. So the rest is in the activity. It's not just a separation of time, but it's also within the context of the activity, and that's what allows everything to move in a smooth way, in a natural rhythm, like the earth moves, like nature knows, the seasons, the rhythms of the day. When is it sunrise, and when is it midday, and when is it sunset time, and what happens at those times? I was just visiting with somebody who said they were in the eclipse or experiencing the eclipse in Missouri. Actually, it was Brenly's mom. And she was saying that, you know, it got dark enough that the crickets started to chirp. And then, you know, as it got light, the birds began to sing. It's like nature knows, right? Moves according to the natural rhythms of light and what is telling us innately when it's time to rest. You know, Louise Hay was a great teacher of body and spirit and understanding the body and spirit and appreciating and honoring. I don't know if you know, but Louise Hay was a well-known spiritual teacher and she made her transition this week. So, oh yeah, collective knowing and honoring right there in that pause, in that, oh. Louise was 90 and of course she made her transition, they say, of natural causes in her sleep. Yeah, in peace, she rests. And Louise was really well known for saying, love yourself. She would punctuate almost everything with that. It was the answer to almost everything. And rest is a way of loving ourselves. Wayne Muller, the author of Sabbath and many other books, says that lack of rest is actually an act of violence. It's a violence to ourselves, it's a violence to our bodies, it's a violence to our children, to our planet, and to each other. Gandhi said it similarly, that haste was violence. And so for us to remember then the nonviolent practices and the importance of honoring rest, whatever rest means, maybe it's just a momentary pause, maybe it's 30 minutes of deep meditation, maybe it's a nice cat nap, or a long winter's nap, or a great festive dinner, or play and recreation, recreation. So speaking of creation, we think about the creator, the source, the mythological story of the Bible of how it all began. What happened with the creator? The creator created for 6 days, and on the seventh day did what? Rested. Even the creator needed rest. And in that early story, remember, the animals were created and the birds and the fish of the sea and also created were humankind, right? Male and female. The Creator made us in the image and the likeness of spirit. And those that initial male and female, Adam and Eve, had children. And remember Cain and Abel, the early children, the brothers. Cain and Abel actually were the very first, if you take the story and the mythological idea of the very beginning of humankind, that these two were the first who committed an act of violence against one another. You remember Cain murdered his brother Abel. Why did he do that? Cain did that because he was so jealous, because God was looking more favorably upon the offering that his brother Abel brought to the altar than on the offering that Cain himself brought. And the way that the story goes is that God then comes to Cain and says, why are you so angry? Now, Cain was the first farmer. He was the one who tilled the soil. And so he brought forth what grows from the soil, fruits and vegetables, to the altar. And Abel, he was a shepherd, so he was wandering upon the earth a little bit more, shepherding, and he brought forth the fat of the firstlings of the sheep. But I don't think it was so much that it was Abel's offering that was favored, it was who Abel was being versus who Cain was being. See, Cain's name metaphysically means possessor, and Abel's name means breath. Cain is the physicalized, the possessor, but what he didn't understand is he's the possessor of the spirit. He's the one who houses the spirit, that breath. As brothers, they are interrelated, and so we can see them as aspects of ourselves as well. As the story goes in the Bible, God then says, after he says, why are you so angry? He says, you know, look, Cain, sin is lurking at the door, and you need to master it. And what he could have just as easily said, what we understand sin to be as missing the mark, is the ego, your ego is lurking at the door, and you need to get a hold of that ego and master it so you can understand the mastery of spirit. And then he says, by the way, where's your brother Abel? And Cain says that very famous line, who am I, my brother's keeper? Yes, actually. We are our brothers and our sisters' keepers, aren't we? Our brothers and our sisters outside of us, others, but also the brothers and sisters, the aspects of ourselves. And so then God says, what have you done? Your brother's blood is crying up from the ground. And I'll tell you what, you will no longer reap from that ground. It will be dry for you now when you go to till the soil. You will have no fruits of your labor. You will be a wanderer upon the earth. So Cain is being taught to, because he couldn't get that other aspect of himself, because Cain, like many of us, thinks that our worth is all tied up in what we produce and how we are recognized for what we produce. Cain was all about doing the hard work, tilling the ground, bringing forth the gifts, and being recognized for that. And that's all he could see, was the physicality of creating and producing and being recognized. What he couldn't understand or could not yet see was that he was also the houser of the breath of spirit, that he was also the houser or the possessor of that animating spirit that wanders too, that doesn't just work according to chronos time, calendars and watches, but also works according to kairos time, the natural rhythms of the body and of nature. And so he was being called to understand that, and he didn't. And so when he didn't, God says, look, you're going to have to learn the hard way, you know? And so you're going to just have to wander upon the earth as a fugitive and just experience that way. And Cain says, oh, this is more than I can bear. Because that side of us that is so ingrained to think that we have to be a worker bee all the time, and that being a worker bee is what gives us the gold star, so to speak, what gives us a sense of a right to exist. And if we only live with that understanding, we are committing violence to ourselves and to each other and to the land and to our bodies and to our children. And so instead of killing one another or aspects of ourselves, we learn how to balance and to blend. And one of the ways we do that is through rest, through really deep or even brief rest. The idea of the sacred nap, that's not new, right? The Spaniards have been teaching us for a long time about the power of siesta. And many cultures have adopted it since. But actually, even long before that, in Islamic law and even written into the Quran, is this idea of rest midday. And even the Romans took naps in the middle of the day. I mean, we all hear Rome wasn't built in a day, right? That's because some people were resting. And much better built because people rested. Yeah. So that's all a part of it. You know, it's tuning in and it's trusting. It's tuning into the body and trusting that rather than trusting only what the outer world tells you, more, faster, better. So that's a rhythm we can pay attention to that we're being told in the outer world, but what's really the truth, the wise truth, is the body that tells us what the natural rhythm is. Or the mind, you know, giving the mind rest. How many of you have been working on a project, and when you take a breather or a reprieve in some way, even walk out the door and have, you know, some fresh air, and you go back, how much more creative you are? You know, Einstein was a big believer in the nap. Einstein, they say he'd get to a point where he couldn't figure out the solution, and he'd go take a nap, and he'd come back, and there was the solution. My grandmother said the same thing, so she must have known something about how this works. It's like a reset. And so for the body, for the mind, and for giving the spaciousness to the spirit to move, we rest in these various ways. One of the ways is that answering that call to prayer, right? Spirit is always calling us into itself, calling us into communion. And so that prayer can be a pause, and that prayer can be a really open time of dedicated prayer and meditation and silence and listening, just like that beautiful song we just heard. I did that once for 10 days on a sabbatical, 10-day meditation retreat. Some of you might have done a Vipassana 10-day retreat as well. And after the 10 days, I really wasn't totally clear on what had happened or what I was experiencing until Brenly picked me up and drove me 5 hours home, and I talked nonstop from the moment I got in the car. She was very patient. She was driving into the driveway, and she said, "Do you know that you've been talking since the moment I picked you up?" It was like somehow my mind, you know, was craving that busyness, I think, you know? So it had been emptied of a lot of those busy thoughts, and so we'll fill it with conversation now, right? So we let the mind be what the mind is. It's a thinker, but we can also give it rest. And the mind, ultimately, the mind as we understand it, not just the brain, but the mind, the consciousness of that, really appreciates that because it is a part of spirit. It's not just a computer-like brain. The Hebrew word for rest is menua, which means joyous repose, delight, and tranquility. So rest is not just a nap or a meditation or a quiet time. It can also be a prayer, or a prayerful play. It can be play and recreation, right? That time, that Sabbath can be filled with those kinds of things that just rejuvenate the spirit. It can be dance and song. In fact, Dan Allender in his book Sabbath says, "Sabbath is a holy time when we feast and we play and we laugh and we sing and we paint and we pray and we tell stories and we read and we laugh some more. And we walk and we watch creation in its fullness." Few people, he says, are willing to enter into the Sabbath and really sanctify a holy day of joy. He says, because a full day of delight and joy is more than most of us can handle in a lifetime, let alone as a weekly practice. And yet, our spirit loves to dance, right? We started out our service with that. Spirit loves to sing and to dance and to feast and to laugh. You know, Jesus was a great partier. He loved a party. You know, every party that happens in the Bible, there he is in the center of it all, turning water to wine and telling stories, doing healings, you know. Sometimes we get this idea that the spiritual walk is like very serious and very solemn, you know, and very quiet, but it can be a festive party of play. And that too is a kind of rest because it is recreation. I have two friends that practice Sabbath. One truly practiced Shabbat as a Jewish woman. Well, she really calls herself interspiritual, but Jewish by heritage. And so at sunset on Friday nights, she and her husband and friends and family, whoever they gather with, they have the blessing of the bread and the wine and the prayers and lighting the candles, and then they have a nice meal. And for 24 hours, they unplug, you know, completely from electronics and online activity, which is big for her because who I'm speaking of is Mirabai Starr, who you might know, and she's an author does a lot of retreats. She's very busy, so that unplug time is important, and she keeps it, but sometimes hard when she's traveling and so on. And so at sunset then the next day, between those two sunset times, there is relaxation and poetry reading and walking and enjoying languid meals. And so we can fill our Sabbath with whatever we want. My other friend who practices Sabbath does the same online unplug for 24 hours. And so if I happen to send her an email, I always get an email back that says, "I'm on Sabbath and I'll return on," and whatever her 24-hour period is. And so, you know, you can do that for yourself. Why not? Why not? Because it's not just for yourself, it's for the world. It's a gift to everyone in your life to unplug and to tune in, to plug in instead to the self, to the spirit, and to the natural rhythms of our lives. That will naturally bring us more rest, because when we pay attention, that's what we're going to hear. like that very, very old ancient bristlecone pine, take rest. So if we took the word rest, we could look at it from as a mnemonic device, if you will, where R is for the relaxation that rest brings, and E is the energizing nature that rest can bring, and S is the success. Because when we rest, we are actually more successful. When we take a little time apart, we come back to our projects with more flow. We come back to our people with more patience, more openness, more presence, deeper connection, therefore. So everything we do is more successful when we have this kind of rhythm that includes rest. And the T is for the temperance that it brings to us. Temperance is a fine-tuning. So it's sort of fine-tuning the whole machine, fine-tuning the whole being, fine-tuning the heart, fine-tuning the body by just simply taking a little time to rest and rejuvenate. Or you could think of the T as tarrying. That's a word we don't use very often anymore. Tarrying like puttering, like shuffling, like moving about in a kind of way that just is its own sort of rhythm. I had a friend that did this really well. In fact, she did indeed shuffle. Her name is Sandy. And Sandy, I knew her pretty well, and of course she had closer friends that knew her really well that told me some stories about her when she made her transition. I had the honor of doing her memorial. And they told me these delightful stories about Sandy. I knew this part of her, but I didn't know all the stories. You know, she's one of those people that knew nothing of Kronos time, right? So the calendar, the clock, not so much, but the Kairos time, the natural rhythm, that was Sandy. And she loved to connect with people. So she was always kind of stopping and talking to people and making connections. And her friends tell stories about things that they would go to with her. And they would be like, Sandy was always lagging behind, right, talking to people. And so they go to a concert, and they were trying to get to the front, because if they got to the front, they could get one of those tables, you know. They're like, come on, Sandy, everybody's got to be there. And, oh, where is Sandy? And she's like all the way behind, you know, talking to yet someone else. But they said time after time, what would happen is they'd get there all in their stress and their I want and I'm trying to create and then nothing would be there. And then Sandy would come along and lo and behold, as soon as she arrived, the table would open up that they wished for. Or the opportunity for backstage passes would be given, you know? It's like she just knew something about the rhythm of Abel, the breath, the spirit, and knew how to move with that. So that's a way that we can rest, too, is just the slowing down, the tempo with which we do things, even things we might not enjoy doing. I mean, certainly the things we do enjoy doing, we might want to have them last all day long, right? I remember once cleaning my garage, and instead of approaching it as, oh, let me just get this done so I can go do whatever it is I want to do today, I just approached it as I just puttered through the whole thing, you know? It was a tarrying experience. And I have to say it was much more enjoyable. I spent the whole day cleaning my garage, and it was lovely. And I felt great at the end, and there was no haste. You know, it just was that kind of day. So we can give that gift to ourselves and to each other. My brother-in-law used to tell my sister after she mowed the lawn, he'd say, how long did it take you? She's like, I don't know. I don't time myself when I'm mowing the lawn. It's Saturday, you know. But he was all about the Kronos time, you know, because he wanted to see if she did it faster than him, you know, so he could get on to something else. So it takes us out of the presence, doesn't it, when we live that way? And that's part of the violence that Wayne Muller and Gandhi talk about. You know, taking us out of the presence then takes a little of the spirit out of the experience. And so we can do anything with joy, anything with joy. I mean, the most horrible task you can imagine could be done with great joy if it's got this sort of integration of rest and presence in it, as well as action. You know, in Aesop's fable of the tortoise and the hare, we all know, right, the tortoise wins, slow and steady, wins the race. But really, I see them both as winners. Because the hare, if you remember the story, sees how slow the tortoise is going and says, huh, I could just go play in the meadow and take a nap. And the hare knows how to play. So then when he wakes from the nap, he just has to run faster to the end. I mean, that's what he chooses to do. They're both winners. It's about trusting our own rhythms. That's the key, is to trust our own rhythms, because they are very much connected to the ancient bristlecone pines, to the Italian cypress trees, to all who have stood here for so long on this earth and know what rest means. The value of rest, of course, is many that I've outlined already. Increased creativity, vitality, connection, and so on. And the perils can be quite big. Illness and depression and isolation and loneliness. So let's not go there. Let's just build rest into our days. We are our brothers and sisters' keepers, and in that sense of all aspects of ourselves as related parts of ourselves. And with that healthy dose of rest, of relaxation and energy and success and temperance, we can move upon the earth with a greater sense of joy and fulfillment. We can move both freely as someone who gets to wander the earth at a certain rhythm, and we can also be those who work the soil, you know, as Cain did. We can be Abel and Cain. It's not throwing one out. It's being both as an integrated whole. If Cain had only remembered that it was the life breath of spirit that made him Abel, that story could have ended in a happy way. And that story is ours. It's our choice to reframe that story for the happy ending that we want. So let's take rest. Let's close out with an affirmation together. I pause and rejuvenate in spirit. One more time. I pause and rejuvenate in spirit. And so it is.